Every living thing responds to love. Not treating people, maltreating people, especially medically. What purpose does a setting that's more extreme than maximum security prison serve, especially when they claim that they're offering mental health treatment? It's an extreme level of abuse and punitive punishment.
Welcome back to Shadow Prisons Unveiled, the podcast where we uncover the hidden world of shadow prisons and the human stories behind them. Today, we're heading to Minnesota, a state where five times as many shadow prisoners have died in the facility's care than have ever been released. You'll be hearing from an advocate who has spent more than a decade helping people in the facility gain access to much-needed medical care, as well as some of the oldest residents currently confined there. So what, in your words, is a shadow prison?
There's this guy. He was incarcerated for X number of years, and as he was going out, he was picked up, put on a judicial hold, and then put into confinement at a cost three times more than when he was in prison.
That was Sarah, our first guest, who is going by a pseudonym to protect her identity. She's been an advocate for over 10 years, fighting for the rights of people locked up in civil commitment facilities. You'll hear that term, civil commitment, used interchangeably with shadow prison throughout this podcast. We call them shadow prisons because we believe that is a more honest label for what these are. Shadow prisoners are individuals who served their time, but the state claims that there is a chance they might commit a new crime. Thus, they are locked up beyond their sentence under the guise of treatment. But we know from the stories coming out from these shadowy institutions that there is no intention here to heal or help. Instead, shadow prisoners wrestle with a system designed to keep them trapped, with little hope of ever returning to the free world.
I, like most people, never knew they existed. And how I came to find out was when a family member who had been incarcerated was coming up on parole. About 3 days shy of him walking out of prison, I got a phone call from him to say, I'm on a judicial hold and they're trying to commit me for life. I was infuriated. My tendency, especially given my background, is to start hitting up attorneys right away. Okay? So that is how I first came to know about this. As I started meeting families, they invited me to be part of an advocacy group. The people that I tend to deal with most are the people that have been denied adequate medical treatment and that have egregious conditions. I try my best to throw them a lifeline to help them get the appropriate treatment that they need.
The state claims these facilities are about treatment. Sarah disagrees.
I've been in mental health hospitals, starting from a very young age, actually. And the mental health hospitals were nothing like this. Nothing like this. In Minnesota, they do not have the capacity to treat major medical conditions. And when individuals with advanced illnesses or chronic conditions need to be in a specialized care facility, MSOP is unwilling to put them into what's known as a forensic hospital.
MSOP is the Minnesota state program that runs the shadow prison there. It's part of the Minnesota Health and Human Services Department, albeit nestled deep within it.
So a lot of these guys weren't told about their conditions and they went on to develop major medical, or they have major medical and they're not being given treatment. We have an individual who had treatment for cancer and who MSOP refused to give chemotherapy, but then they turn around and straight out lied and said that he didn't want it. They had one individual kicked off of a transplant list because they say he's not following his treatment. It's an extreme level of abuse and punitive punishment.
Sarah's been able to help countless shadow prisoners navigate the complexities of their confinement. People like Cyrus Gladden, a 74-year-old man who spent the last 10 years locked up under MSOP's key.
All my life I've had a bad back. I was in a car wreck when I was 16, and this place, as I've gotten older, refuses to give me any treatment for it. I work in the kitchen, and every time that I get over a 3.5-hour shift and go back to my unit, I literally can't stand up straight or walk right until I've had a chance to sit down, oftentimes until I've laid down. The fact that they won't treat it or even acknowledge that it existed is particularly cruel.
How common is this kind of neglect in your experience?
100% common. That's exactly what it is, especially for older people.
Another shadow prisoner, Stephen Houseman, told me that you two had been in contact about trying to save the life of his roommate, Scott Crampton.
Scott was being denied medical treatment, okay? His condition worsened. He was literally begging, like begging for medical treatment, begging for medical care. When Scott was diagnosed with renal issues some years back, MSOP never told him, they never set up any kind of protocol for treatment. Continually documented in Scott's records is that he needed nutritional support, and MSOP never told him that. Scott only came to know it when he fell into end-stage renal failure. The fact that they weren't addressing the failing kidneys started leading to liver failure. And the only way to relieve that is through a procedure known as paracentesis, where that fluid is drained off. MSOP didn't want to do anything. So for me, that's when I had to go back to the politicians. That's when I had to go to the Department of Health and reach out to their investigators. That's when I had to try and rustle up as many attorneys as I could. All of that just to get him the basic care that he should have been having.
Scott's roommate, Stephen, told me that Scott's kidney failure was completely preventable. That it wasn't just neglect. It was something MSOP actively caused.
Scott Crampton was diagnosed with kidney failure. And this was caused by some antibiotic that he was given for a rash that he had on his leg. Apparently, they gave him the wrong antibiotic because right on it, it said may cause kidney failure. Well, his kidneys failed. They refused to give him dialysis for months. The man got sicker and sicker and sicker until his liver died. After his liver died, he developed what's called hepatic encephalopathy, which is swelling of the brain.
That's horrifying.
One of the things, too, is when Scott fell, he broke his hip. The guard at the time, they don't refer to them as guards. I think they call them security counselors or what bogus name they use for it. He would not alert the staff to Scott's fall because he said they were all on break.
Sarah also talked to me about the mental health of the people confined in these facilities. People like Scott, who, even as they were experiencing dementia, were refused release or care under any circumstances.
Scott was having bouts of, like, dementia, basically. He went through a situation where he was not able to get to the toilet on time, and he was soiling himself. They still expect him to clean his cell, change his sheets, everything that he does not have the ability to do.
We were able to get a hold of a recording of Scott from this time. His voice tells the story of what MSOP did better than any anecdote could.
From this institution, they're silly-ass policies. I need to get some dialysis. I need to get it soon. I'm getting so weak, I can't hardly keep my eyes open. And I can't hardly sleep.
Scott is in such a compromised mental state right now. When you talk to him, it is difficult because he only has 15 minutes and is really trying to find words and recall things.
An MSOP claimed that Scott refused dialysis.
They turned around and straight out lied and said that he said he didn't want it.
And you were fighting for him this whole time?
Yes. But the harder somebody like me fights, the more punitive the measure against my family members are. Administration doesn't talk to me anymore, like the top brass. They won't respond to emails. They won't respond to queries anymore. And if I call in for medical updates, I'm only ever brushed off and told everything is good.
Stephen told me something that stuck with me.
I don't know what or why, but most of the men in here, out of the 100 and some that died, have died from cancer. Some form of cancer. My roomie has cancer. My friend across the unit has cancer. There's a lot of people in here with cancer. I've got lots of problems myself that I they don't address or won't address. And it's that way with the majority of the people in here. They've just given up and are ready to die because there's literally no hope. You know, most of us are just hopeless.
Stephen, Scott, Cyrus. What does it say about a mental health institution when the vast majority of people in these facilities are dying or dead?
What does it say about them? It says they're a shit institution. It says there is no priority. Keep them hanging by thread. Keep them alive long enough to collect that paycheck and claim that you need $200 million to run your program.
I wanted Sarah to explain why. Why was it this way? How was this fair? What drives this systemic indifference? And why aren't these facilities being held accountable for such medical neglect?
They're not subject to disciplinary action. According to the courts, they have immunity. They can do whatever they damn well please. That's the biggest thing that is messed up. And that is something that people really need to understand. They are a god unto themselves. They falsify records and they have the legislatures believing that they serve a purpose. All anybody has to say is, oh, no, these individuals are all a huge threat. And that's it. People say, okay, here's your money. So that's why they exist. Because nobody knows the truth and nobody knows what goes on. It's like this is literally a human experiment.
What would you say to taxpayers who might not know that their money is funding such a cruel system?
I would say that $180, $200 million of your tax dollars is going to support nothing. But meanwhile, programs that focus on victims and recovery and support and assistance are being shut down left, right, and center. Because there's no funding available to them.
And for our listeners, what can they do to bring attention to these stories and push for meaningful change that we both seem to want?
The best thing I can tell anybody is get educated. Like put aside your preconceived notions, put aside everything that you ever knew or ever thought and remain teachable. You have the End MSOP Coalition. You have the CURE initiative, you have Just Futures, of course, Dr. Eric Janis and what is now known as Mitchell Hanlon Law School. There's several resources there. Remain teachable.
Now, some people are going to question the stories coming out of Moose Lake. How do you go about verifying what you hear to ensure accuracy and credibility?
You talk to the guys. Sometimes when I'm dealing with extreme cases of medical maltreatment, with their permission, I record them. And every single one of these guys is willing to have that recording released. There's a pattern. When you talk about Steve and Scott and Ivan, they have the same story that Cyrus has and that, you know, ABCDEFG has. And these guys are not connected to each other because they're on completely different units and they don't dine together. They don't mingle, things like that. You know, that same story holds true when you have different people telling you the same thing, especially when I can corroborate it with medical records from actual medical institutions.
Some people aren't going to understand why you help these people. So why do you, in your own words?
I do this because nobody else will. When people hear sex offender, they shut down. And all they harp about is victim, 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 victim. And I say, that's true. That's true. But 100% of these guys that are incarcerated have been the victims of circumstances or situations or conditions, a lot of times worse than what they ever perpetrated on anyone, right? People are not born evil. They don't just wake up one day and say, gosh darn it, I'm going to go out and hurt somebody. They don't do that. They're a byproduct of where they came from. And nobody ever wants to take the time to hear these stories. Nobody ever wants to treat them as a human being.
Do you think these 70 and 80 year olds will ever go home?
No, most of them will die there.
Each year brings more deaths among those confined.
On average, someone dies here every 60 days.
Most of us are just hopeless.
They're not providing any means of a clear path home.
Before we wrap up, we want to leave you with this. Shadow prisons operate in secrecy, targeting marginalized individuals and tearing families apart. But they thrive because too few people know they exist. If you've been moved by the stories of Scott, Cyrus, Sarah, and Stephen, there's something you can do. Reach out to your local representatives. Demand transparency in these systems. Ask them to investigate indefinite post-sentence civil confinement facilities and push for reform. Share what you've learned here today with your friends and family, because awareness is the first step towards change. Let's stand with all of the families still waiting for a just future. Visit ajustfuture.org for resources, advocacy tools, and ways to get involved.